trading, trader development, mentoring successful traders. I appreciate your coming today. I think we have an unusual and very productive session ahead of us. It's a real pleasure to work with my two colleagues here to talk with you about the mentoring process and how traders develop, how they become experts at what they do. My name is Brett Steenbarger. I am a associate professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at SUNY Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York, and I've also worked at King Street LLC, a trading firm here in Chicago, working with their traders, and along the way, authored a book called The Psychology of Trading, and I'll be sharing with you some new material from a book that I'm in the process of writing right now. We have, before I introduce my co-panelists, we have some folks in the audience and some who are not in the audience who I still want to acknowledge. I don't think Marianne's here, Marianne Burns from FIA. She was instrumental in putting this session together, and I want to acknowledge Marianne's role in our meeting here today. John Conley here from Advantage Futures and TeachMeFutures.com, who's been instrumental in developing some webinars, some training efforts on the web for traders. A good resource, TeachMeFutures.com. Is Tom here? Tom Alexander from Alexander Trading. Also doing some work in training of traders and putting out a newsletter to help people develop trading ideas. Gene O'Sullivan from CQG, if you can raise your hand, Gene. And CQG is doing some new things with their software, and I'll be working with them at the end of this month on some training initiatives. We have two very experienced panelists today to join me, both of whom have extensive experience working with traders live in a hands-on way. So what we have here are really three people who work with different groups of traders to improve their performance. Our first presenter is Tom Rice, to my far right. Tom Rice's relationship with Goldenberg Haymeyer & Company began in 1999. He started as an independent trader and customer, and then joined GH's management team as director of trader development in the spring of 2005. Prior to his tenure at GH, he was at Transmarket, specializing in the 30-year Treasury bond and the S&P E-mini. So he has a trading background himself. Tom left the floor in 2000 to pursue electronic trading. His history in the industry begins in 1985, when he worked for Lynn Waldock as a runner. From 86 to 92, he clerked for a number of companies and individuals before establishing himself as an independent trader. He's been a member of the Chicago Board of Trade since 1992. To my immediate right, Doug Hirschhorn. Doug has a PhD in sports psychology. He's a former Division I baseball player and a floor trader at the CBOT. So again, he has trading experience as well. He's currently the COO of Sperling Enterprises, LLC, which is a New York-based trading fund. In addition, Doug consults to high net worth traders, trading firms, funds of funds, and multi-billion dollar hedge funds. He's the co-author of the book, The Trading Athlete, Winning the Mental Game of Online Trading, published by John Wiley in 2001, and is a regular columnist for Trader Monthly magazine. What we're going to do with this session, we decided that we would break the session down into the three most common problems, performance problems that affect traders. The first problem we're calling under-trading. Under-trading means that you identify an opportunity for trading and you're unable to act upon that opportunity. Something freezes you. There's some kind of inhibition or anxiety that results you in not making trades you should make. So that's our first area. The second area is over-trading. That's where we find ourselves putting on trades where we don't really have an edge. We find ourselves not truly adhering to our trading plans. And then the third area of problems that we'll be tackling is a an excessive focus on the money aspect of trading, being so concerned about P&L that it colors our decision-making and prevents us from trading effectively. So we have three different areas: under-trading, over-trading, and the money focus. And each of us is going to take just a few minutes, about 5 minutes each, and present to you our best practice or practices for dealing with that problem. So you're going to hear about the best practice Tom has, the best practice Doug has, the best practice I have. And at the end of the session, we will be passing out handouts that you will have to take away with you that summarize some of our ideas. So hopefully over the course of today's session, you'll receive best practices in all of these areas from experienced people that you can take away either in your work as a trader or in your work helping traders. So with no further ado, we'll start with the problem of under trading and start with Tom Rice.
Thank you, Doug. Morning. I'm Tom Rice. I'm with Goldenberg Heemeyer. I talking about under trading, it was great conversation we had when we started this, putting together this program, talking about the daily trading mistakes. And that's the under trading part is, for me, is what I've seen with all my traders, is the fear of making a mistake. It's either that or a lack of confidence. Obviously, those are the two things, and I try to keep it real simple with them. They put a trade on, they can't react. You know, the market's not going their way, they're not feeling really good, so they get this paralyzation. And the challenge with that has been, for me, is to get them out of being paralyzed and get them out of thinking about the what ifs. What if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? It's a standard. Everybody can talk about this in the game. You know, we know somebody's under trading. We know somebody's over trading. You know, we know this. You got your guys. They stand out. The real challenge is to get through to the individual. And for me, it's a lot of one-on-one coaching. I have to spend a lot of time. I have to spend a lot of time with each individual to find out what is the source of their fear. What's going on with them? Why aren't they trading? Why aren't they putting on the trade? You know, what's the focus? It becomes a very tedious process. I've noticed this with a lot of experienced traders that used to trade really well, and they went to the computer, and then they had a lot of talent, a lot of success, and then I get them on the machine, and they'll start off really well the first couple of months, you know, because they're more cautious. And then they start showing their undisciplined side, and they get whacked. And then after that, it becomes this, they can't click, I can't click. And it becomes a tier of frustration. It's nonstop frustration because they see the market, they want to engage in the market, but they can't. They have a loss of confidence. They're absolutely paralyzed. You know, it's a very hard thing to watch because it's very frustrating from my point of view, especially allocating capital and time and effort when the guy knows he has ability, but it is a process, and it does take a lot of time. From my experience, I've seen that in this area, to get them to pull the trigger on a daily basis is a baby step routine for me. It's like I have to baby step with them. You know, this is, do it today, just, you know, increase your round turns a little bit. If they're trading 50 round turns, tomorrow I want to see 75 round turns by the end of the week, and do that for a couple weeks. And as they do it more and more, they start to say, oh yeah, you know what, I could see this market again. I could see it again. You know, it comes after a loss. You know, you're up a bunch of money and you do something undisciplined and now your P&L is negative. I mean, if you're a trader, that's a given. That's going to happen. And to come out of that place and to trade again requires a lot, for my practices, it requires a lot of psychological work. I'm going to say that word, but it's true. It's a mental game. It's constant. I employ a coach myself that I work with on a daily basis. And, you know, that's just what I believe in. I believe that that's my best practice for each trader in the under trading category because there's so much that goes into it. The mental block that they're not aware of, the one that I'm showing to them through a lot of the techniques and strategies, I'll show them. They're going to come out of my session and they're going to know what their problem is. And then they're at the source. They're absolutely at the source of everything they're getting. you know, I am at the source. Everything I'm getting in my trading in my life, I am at the cause of. And that's this is why trading said under trading, over trading is such a confronting game. Because we are at the source. I can't blame the markets, I can't blame my news system, I can't blame, you know, CNBC or whoever. You know, they put out some news and I didn't hear it and the market got swept. You know, no, I am at the cause. And same with the under trading guys. It's a very trying issue for me with my traders. But I found that my best results comes from a lot of patience. You know, I can't get on them too much, but I have to hold them to a standard, keep them in integrity with themselves, and not let them get any wiggle room, no excuses. You know, why didn't you put the trade on? You saw it, you have to go. And as each day goes on, I find that that's the best way for me to get them to start engaging more. That's all I really have on this subject. I'll pass it off to Doug.
Thanks, Tom. I want to know who your coach is. If you're a trading coach, I wonder who that is. And how come it's not me? That's what I'm wondering. Brett gave my background and my perspective, and I do work with prop traders also, but I have a pretty sizable consulting business. And the way I'm going to give you information today about my 5+ years of experience working with traders is going to be in the format of case studies. So I'll tell you some stuff, a situation, what the trader was dealing with, and solutions that I've implemented that have been very effective over the years. I've also had some that weren't effective, and you know, you get the benefit of my 5 years of learning from my own mistakes, and I get to hit you with it every couple minutes. So the fear of an injury, it can cause under trading, and the best example I can give you from a movie perspective, if anybody saw the movie Top Gun with Tom Cruise or Days of Thunder, and that whole fear of re-injury, inability to re-engage in the process after a traumatic experience. I actually came across this concept when I was studying sports psychology, and it was a phenomenon that existed with athletes after they would have a traumatic injury. For example, a running back running up the middle, carrying the ball, would get hit, knee would get blown out for the season, would spend, you know, 6 weeks surgery, rehab, 6 months before they can get back in the game. The team physician would say you're cleared, the medical experts would say your knee is good to go, and the player was unable to actually re-engage full force in the activity because of the fear of re-injuring himself. So with traders, what I found is it's actually a very similar experience, but instead of getting hit by someone, getting hit by a linebacker, instead of that traumatic physical experience, they're having an emotionally traumatic experience. So the case study I'll give you is a client of mine. She funded her account with about $600,000 and quickly built that account to $1.4 million. Within 1 month, the client lost the entire $1.4 million trading the same commodity in 1 month. Basically long, 100 contracts or so, and then didn't have the disciplines in place to keep herself active in the account. Client had plenty of capital that she could have put to work if she wanted to, but the experience was so traumatic for her that she was not able to trade the markets for another 3 years. She'd watch it every day, but she wasn't able to put any money back to work in the markets, and it wasn't because she didn't have the money, it was because psychologically she was so traumatized by the experience. She contacts me, she heard a presentation that I did on a website somewhere for Refco Product Client Group back in August, contacted me to work with her about the issue, laid it out. And my whole thing is about accountability. I believe everyone wants to be great at what they do. I don't believe we're all willing to do what it takes. And traders especially. When I talk to my traders, I'll say, hey, who wants to be successful? And everybody will raise their hand. I want to be successful. Okay, are you willing to do what it takes? That's a whole different question, guys. Are you willing to put in the time, effort, have the disciplines, not give into temptation when you want to do it, not overtrade? Are you willing to get yourself comfortable with being uncomfortable, which is what trading is about when you're making decisions based on uncertainty? Are you willing to take risk? Are you willing to limit those losses on the downside? And we all want to be successful, especially traders. They want to make the money, be successful in their careers, but unfortunately, and as I found out with this recent client, engaging in the process is a whole different level. So what I laid out for her as an effective strategy was I implemented daily journaling. So I have a process. It's basically an 18-step process that I give my clients. Makes it easy for them to follow. Point one is, you know, what's your motto for the day? Something thought-provoking and forward perspective. And it goes through another 17 points, everything ranging from what's your game plan for the morning, how did the trade work out, what worked, what didn't work, what's working in the market, what's not working in the market, what economic numbers are coming out today that you have to be aware of, Another step I have later in the process is what question, I have my traders ask one thoughtful question each day to engage the learning process, making sure they're asking someone about something with their trading or with the psychology of trading. But not something as simple as I asked John Doe what color shirt he was going to wear tomorrow. No, I want to know something important and meaningful. Challenge yourself. Are you willing to push yourself to educate yourself to the next level? And the final step in the process, the 18 steps, is I have them complete the statement, I'm a better trader today than I was yesterday because. It's one of those things, and if you read anything about early research in motivational psychology and self-perception and self-help, there's a guy named Earl Nightingale. And he was kind of like that, if you tell yourself the same thing enough, you'll start to believe it. And his whole thing was, you look in the mirror every morning and tell yourself how good you are and how nice you are and how smart you are. It's called behavioral conditioning, okay? And most people say, oh, you know, that doesn't work. Try it. Are you willing to put yourself to that test? Are you willing to force yourself to think more positive about what you're doing in the process? Not, market's impossible. I'm sure Tom's heard this all the time. Market's impossible. I suck. The word impossible, as soon as you say the word impossible, you've given up all hope of possibly making any money. Why try if it's impossible? And that's a behavioral concept. The daily plan, game plan worksheets, identifying specific entry and exit levels, and then providing accountability on a daily basis through emails and phone call. And that actually is the key component, because I can give the information to the client, but unless I hold them accountable as their coach to deliver the information, in the end, they don't follow through with what they need to do.
Okay. It's absolutely fascinating for me to listen to Tom and Doug. We prepared our responses independently, and yet there's some interesting overlaps. Those of you who can see my handout, you notice I mentioned PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and looking at the under-trading problem as a variety of anxiety. Specifically, it's a form of performance anxiety, where something has happened to impact the trader that changes how they view themselves, changes how they view trading, and that inhibits them from making trades and acting according to their plans. We know from post-traumatic stress disorder that just an individual traumatic event can radically reshape how people see themselves and the world. And so when people go through traumas, such as the loss that Doug just mentioned with his client, we need to have techniques that help people face those traumas in a way that won't keep stimulating the anxiety that disrupts decision-making. Now, it turns out in the research literature in psychotherapy that the best type of therapy for traumatic situations is something called exposure-based therapy. And this gets at something that Tom was mentioning, that you have to get the trader who is anxious, the trader who is under trading, you have to get them to engage the market. You can't simply talk to them to get them to feel better, and you can't get them only to talk to themselves to feel better. They have to actually experience the markets in a safe context and in a successful context to regain their confidence. Now, what you do in exposure-based therapy is you take graded exposures to the very things that have traumatized the person. So you start with very small exposures and gradually build up to greater exposures. So for instance, if someone was traumatized by a loss in the market and found themselves anxious about their performance, you would have them, for instance, begin by just imagining themselves trading. You wouldn't have them actually put any trades on, but they would do a vivid imagery, imagining themselves putting on a trade, managing a trade, exiting a trade, all the while keeping themselves calm and focused. Then you go to the next step of maybe doing a simulated trade while they keep themselves calm and focused. And then they put on a one lot position, and then a two lot position. But each step along the way, they are facing what has traumatized them in a safe, manageable context. You cannot overcome a performance anxiety by talking about it. The way you overcome an anxiety is by facing it directly, but facing it in a way that builds your sense of mastery and builds your sense of safety and confidence. And so where a mentor can be helpful is in structuring the experience for you, where you go step by step by step to face your fears, keep yourself calm and focused, and able to act. And it turns out that even significant traumatic stresses, such as wartime stresses and stresses associated with assault and rape, those traumatic anxieties can be overcome with short-term therapies if the therapies are hands-on and get people to directly face what they're afraid of. Okay, now we're going to have time for questions at the end. I'm keeping everyone, including myself, to a timetable so that we'll have plenty of time for questions at the end. And I know I'll be hanging around, and probably you guys as well, hanging around after the session if you have questions about how to implement any of these ideas. But now let's go to overtrading, which I'm sure all of us have had some experience with. Some of us personal. Tom?
Thanks. Yeah, definitely overtrading is an area that I specialize in. Personally, the reason why is I could always see an opportunity, at least I think I can, and that comes with confidence. A lot of years of coaching, you know, we talked about, you know, who's my coach and things that I've used, and for 16 years I used Tony Robbins along those lines of things like that, and I was a coach for the last 12 for him. So I used a lot of, you know, I can do all type techniques, and it's a very good thing for a guy who came from a belief system that I did, that I thought I couldn't do anything, all right? Because I was that guy that said I couldn't do it, you know, I mean, based on trial and error, you know, I blew out the first couple of times, and believe me, that'll, you start, you know, when you don't have money, and you borrow money, and you start losing money, I know it's paralyzing. But I will tell you the flip side is that I've overcome that side of it, and I become very confident in my ability. That said, I tend to overtrade at times, and me being overtrading, or my traders overtrading, it's a human condition. It's not isolated to just me. Is, and I think you guys would agree at times, that the lack of discipline comes into play. And you know, some guys have more discipline. You know, and discipline isn't something you just say. It's not a word. It's an action. Discipline is something you need to invoke on a daily basis. It's a muscle. You know, and like I tell my guys, if you're going to trade 5 lots and go to 50 lots, you don't have the muscle to start carrying the discipline that's going to be required to start looking at the adjustment in your P&L. You know, if you're a weightlifter, you're not going to go in the gym and start bench pressing 350 pounds today. Well, you're certainly not going to jump from 5 lots to 50 lots and manage it the same way. And then to keep clicking and clicking and clicking. And the thing about electronic trading is it offers the opportunity to trade in a nanosecond. As soon as you click, you have a trade. So what I have to do with my guys is I have to adjust their click size. I don't let them get to the 50 lot. I don't let them get to a point where they could lose 25 grand in 15 minutes on a number. It could happen very quickly. So I automate their losses, I automate their click size, and then I still monitor them because I still know they're going to do it. You know, regardless of whatever parameter I put in there, they're going to do it, and it's totally normal. It's totally normal, but I don't think if anybody was printing money in this thing, everybody would be complaining about it. It's the fact that at some point, there's a significant loss. There's all this work, there's all this time and this effort, and then you overclick, you overtrade in a certain market, and it's all gone. That's a devastating moment, and you have to keep being able to pull yourself back up. Perception of opportunity. Is there really an opportunity here? That's a self-honesty thing, or am I just forcing it? You know, and then you take a look at the chart and you say, oh wow, for the last 15 minutes, we've been in the 5-4 tick range, and I bought and sold the high 8 times and sold the low, you know, 8 times and took it for a tick loss. I mean, you get chopped to pieces in those things, over trading, instead of pulling back. And I have to constantly say this to my guys, pull back and be patient, be selective. Be selective on your trades. And then it's just the final thing, it's just breaking their trading rules. You know, I'd imagine at some point, if you're a trader, you have a rule that says, I am not going to trade this much at this certain time of the day. And it's following your trading rules and really having That's why I always say a coach, you know. It'll keep you honest. You know, now, the thing about that is that a lot of these prop firms like ours, and they employ me to do this, is to stay on these guys. And some days it's literally like babysitting. And, you know, that's fine. That's what they're paying me to do. That's what I'm trying to do, is create a group. And but the flat out, if a trader would just grow up, and it's hard, you know, and I don't have it mastered, and I've spent a lot of money trying to grow up. But man, I can tell you this, the pain would be a lot less. And I know everybody in there that's a trader knows this is a painful game. This is not a glamour job. This is a job for people who want to make a lot of money and create a lot of financial independence, and then there's going to be pain involved. You know, and I can tell you the one area that really helps me is to do a journal at the end of the day, to fully assess what it is that I have done, what my traders have done. And I make them assess that every day. Tell me what you did right. Tell me what you did that cost you money, because I don't like using the word wrong. Tell me what you learned from it and what your game plan is for the next day. You know, and I think these practices are in line, and hold them accountable. I mean, they have to be in integrity with themselves. If you're lying to yourself about why you're clicking the mouse, forget it. It's just not going to work. Even when you're being honest with yourself about why you're overtrading, whether it be a lack of discipline, a perception of what you think is opportunity, or breaking your rules, even if you're being honest about that, that is not winning the battle. That's just getting you to a platform, a place where you can now start to grow and build that muscle. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. Taking notes quickly on your stuff. It's good stuff. I found the fear of missing out causes overtrading. And it's a bizarre, I'm about to say something to you that's bizarre, that I discovered after working with traders over and over again, is I realized traders would rather lose money than miss out on an opportunity.
Yes.
And that to me is absolutely illogical. Because if you ask any trader why do they trade, the answer is to make money, right? It's not to make friends, it's not to build a social network, it's to make money. Well, if you're trading to try to make money, then why would you do a behavior that's kind of productive to that goal? Doesn't make sense. And so they think that by overtrading, they're actually increasing their chances of making money, but they're decreasing their chances for a variety of reasons, as you've all seen or we'll talk about. So I asked myself why. Well, the reason why is because it looks pretty simple to do. You can enter the market at any time, like Tom pointed out, and now, especially global, you can do it any, you push a button, you're involved, you're participating. It's up, down, and sideways. You don't need a graduate degree to do this. It looks very simple. And you will know people that make money doing this, and they're not any smarter than you. Right? Some of them are a lot less intelligent than you are, and you're saying, how does that person make money? If they make, you know, $5,000 a day, I should be making 10. I heard a great, great statement yesterday from someone. They said they walked into a trading firm. Their first experience was they were trading next to a guy who had been in the country for 3 months. From Yugoslavia, didn't speak a word of English, and the guy was banging out $5,000 a day. And this guy sat down and said, if he's making $5,000 a day, I'll make 10, 15 a day. A year later, guess who's sitting there and who's not sitting there? Right? The guy that kept the game simple. Didn't overthink it. Up, down, and sideways, had the patience and discipline. So here's a case study I'll give you where I've dealt with the fear of missing out, and it caused overtrading. Trader was active in chat rooms and seminars, easily influenced by the opinions of others. Hearing other experts talk, and was easily influenced by, well, you know, if so-and-so says that must be right, maybe I'm missing something. They had a history of making money, but despite low commission costs that they were even paying, a large portion of the profits were churned because of overtrading. He experienced feelings that he was being spread too thin in the markets and never had enough time to dig into trades and develop real conviction in them. Real satisfaction that he knew what he was doing with the trades. So some solutions that I implemented for the trader were shifting his focus from a relative comparison to an absolute comparison. Okay, that's a very interesting statement. Human beings tend to compare ourselves relative to other human beings. You see it in sports, you see it in business, we're conditioned by society to do it. We look around and we size ourselves up. Mm-hmm. Top performers, like the Tiger Woods of the world, the Michael Jordans of the world, they compare themselves on an absolute perspective. They go out there with the mentality of, what am I going to do today to make sure that I'm better than I was yesterday? And actually, when I screen for talent, I ask traders the very simple question. Which is more satisfying to you? To win the race or to beat your previous score or time? Simple question. We all have a preference, and you can tell tremendous amounts of information about how their psychological makeup is and how they perceive themselves. And the way I look at it is, what do I have to deconstruct mentally to give this guy an opportunity to be successful in trading? Because if they say to me, well, winning the race is more important, then basically they're telling me that they're looking at relative comparisons. You win the race, doesn't mean anything. The guy next to you could be very slow, so you beat him. If you play golf, we talk about it playing down to someone else's talent, someone else's level. It happens a lot with golfers. You play with someone that's better than you, you tend to shoot your best games. You play with someone worse than you, you tend to play down to their level. In my trading firm, my best trader is up here, and the number two guy is here. The challenge I have with him is, when he starts to hit big numbers on a day, he looks around and no one else is near him, so he becomes complacent. And I have to get him focusing on the internally absolutes, as opposed to the relative comparisons. I had him identify a handful of scenarios that he was good at. Those specific scenarios that he evaluated gave him the best risk-reward opportunities. Not the expert next to him, not the person that was hot for the week, what he felt was the best risk-reward scenarios, and then to only focus on those scenarios and play when those setups were in place. So it's that patience theme once again. And the third step, of course, as you're getting to know me, establishing game plans, holding him accountable to those game plans. I get 30, 40 emails every morning, and then throughout the day, but I have specific rules. You want to trade, you give me your game plan. I know you're not a mind reader, but you tell me what you are looking to do. And then you know what? When you tell me the evaluation of your game plan after the morning trade is over, I don't want to hear the words, I had the right idea, but I decided not to follow what I said. Then we have to have a deeper conversation. Don't waste your time in this career. Don't waste my time as your coach. Do it or don't do it. There is no try. Accountability is key to performance. I'll use my wife as a small example in this one. She's an intelligent woman. She exercises and has fitness. Does she need a trainer to tell her how to lift weights? No. Does she hire a trainer to make sure she shows up at the gym at 6 in the morning? Yes. Accountability. Hiring that coach element to take a game to the next level. Thanks.
Excellent. If you take a look at my handout for the overtrading scenario, I mentioned that a best practice is something called behavioral analysis, and let me explain to you what I mean by that. The overtrading typically stems from some emotional trigger. There is some emotional state that people are entering that becomes associated with their impulsive trading. The challenge is that the emotional triggers that can lead to the overtrading are different for different people. For some traders I work with, the most common emotional trigger is frustration, anger. They have a losing trade, someone swipes the book on them, and they lose a few ticks, and suddenly their next trade is a revenge trade. They want to get that money back. That's overtrading because of frustration. I have other traders who can't tolerate boredom. And it's a slow market, it's trading in a narrow range, and they're bored, and they want action, and so they put a trade on, even though there's no real edge to that trade. That's their trigger. There are many different emotional triggers for different people. The best practice that I'm emphasizing for you is simply a behavioral analysis in which you stand outside yourself to identify, what are my emotional triggers? What has led up to the point where I have put on these bad trades? What's been happening in the market and what's been happening within me? In my book, I call it taking your emotional temperature. You're standing back, observing yourself, and you're saying, how am I feeling? What am I thinking? What am I experiencing? What are my triggers? Now, another challenging aspect is that some of our triggers are not just ones from the present, but also stem from our past. All of us have been through stresses and life challenges in our past. And sometimes when the frustrations and challenges from our past become stimulated in the present, we resort to old ways of coping, ways that might have worked back then, but now get us in trouble. So for instance, when I was young growing up, I lived in a household where there was a fair amount of arguing, fighting, discord, and lashing out and getting mad was quite acceptable as a way of dealing with your frustrations, and so I learned to do that. And I learned that when people in the family got in my way and interfered with my independence and got in the way of doing what I wanted to do, that I could lash out at them, and we would hash it out as a family, and it all worked pretty well. Well, now I'm in the market, and I have a position on, and suddenly it's going against me, and I feel some of those same frustrations that I felt growing up, and I lash out. Maybe I lash out verbally, and I start yelling and carrying on and tossing my mouse across the trading room and losing my focus. Maybe I lash out by doubling up my position. I'll show the market. But in that situation, my trigger is not just something from the present. It's triggering something from my past. And so when we do a behavioral analysis by keeping a journal, by talking into a tape recorder as we're trading to monitor what we're doing, by doing a behavioral analysis, we can identify what in the present and what from our past is triggering us and leading us to lose discipline. We lose discipline because we're in a state when we're trading that's different from the state that we were in when we made our trading plans, when we established our discipline. So what shifts your state? What moves you? By doing the analysis, you become your own therapist. You become your own trading coach. The idea is not to employ someone like me. I guarantee you that. The idea is for you to become your own counselor, therapist, coach. And the last topic, but not least, Mr. Rice. We have the money focus becoming so concerned about P&L that you stop trading the way you know how.
Thank you. Well, this is quite a panel, I got to say that. I mean, some real information being put out here. I hope you guys are definitely taking this in, because these are the do's and don'ts. These are the answers to how to. Just thinking about, it was a nice lead into talking about money focus, because especially about the past. When I first came in this business, I was looking at a lot of people who made a lot of money, and boy, did I not fit in. My clothes didn't fit in, my bank account didn't fit in, my educational background didn't fit in, and I thought, whoa, I'm in the wrong game. These guys all must know, because they come from, you know, families that were bred into this business and all this stuff. So it's pretty interesting how the tables can turn if you definitely hold yourself accountable and put your feet to the fire. I wrote focus on dollars rather than strategy. I meant that as the wrong thing to do. Traders will come in and they'll focus on the dollars. What am I going to make today and by what time? Instead of a strategy, a game plan. What am I going to do if that doesn't happen? What am I going to do if the market's not busy? What am I going to do if it's, you know, a big number and the number was a flop and it did nothing and I'm all geared up to do something? See, we get this number in our head and we say, this is what we got to do for today, instead of monitoring, evaluating the market conditions and asking ourselves, is it really offering this opportunity? You know, we will focus on the money. I don't even allow them. I'll put them in the, you know, it's a privilege with my guys to be able to look at their P&L. I don't want them looking at the P&L. I want them having a game plan. My three rules: focus, you have to be focused on the game. Number two, you have to have a reason for putting the trade on. And number three, you have to manage it. It's that simple. And I've spent tons of money to learn three simple rules: focus, have a reason, manage. And that's it. You can get in all this other stuff, and there is stuff, and it's all going to show up in our P&L. You get in a fight with your girlfriend or your boyfriend, let me tell you something. Next day is probably not a good idea to be trading right off the bat full throttle. You'd be surprised at how quickly that P&L will go down. You're being out of integrity with yourself. You know, look, it's a very stress-filled game. You know, a lot of guys battle with a lot of different demons and women. It's not just men and women. You know, for me, a long time, it was drugs and alcohol. You know, and I haven't done that stuff in 14 years. And I've been in this business 23 years. You know, If you're doing that stuff now, you're not going to compete against an automated trading system. I'll tell you right now. If you really want to get the money focus, there are numbers plugged into that game right now that you have to be totally efficient. And you can't be worrying about the dollars. You need to be worried about, if I get hit, how quick can I get out? Where can I get out? What's my strategy? The other thing I wrote was thinking about bills. Everybody's got bills, right? I can guarantee you, if you look at my monthly sheets, when my worst days were, it was when I let the bills accumulate on my desk and didn't pay them for 10 days, and I knew they were sitting there, and the one day I went in and said, oh, you know what, I'm going to do these at the end of the day, but I really thought about the bills, and I went in and then lost a lot of money. It's because I was worried about money. Am I going to be able to pay them? Am I really going to be able to pay them? These are the things that come in time and time again with my guys. Focusing on the money, focusing on the money. Here's the one thing I do with my guys. I tell them, I say, what's the worst thing that could happen? What's the worst thing that could happen? Maybe you got to move back in with mom and dad. Maybe you got to go somewhere. You got a place to stay. Maybe you have to take a second job, third job. Whatever you do, you can't make, you know, I listened to Don Baldwin say this at the Midland Hotel about 15 years ago, and he said, you cannot make money your focus, ever. You can't. It's a game of skill. It's a game of discipline. Now, there is money management skills once you get up money. I'm not saying the money's not important, but to be a core trader that's printing money and making money, I'm talking the money that you want to make, you have to be a machine, and it can't be about the money. And the last thing it goes into is the self-worth. I say that day, because like I just said, there's a lot of things we do in our lives or could possibly do in our lives, and life shows up, you know. And that day, you may want to reward yourself. You may be feeling good. And there's days that we've had 20 winning days in a row, and now I got to really do something stupid because I'm out of my comfort zone. Been there. I got guys that do it all the time. You know, the one thing I try to do with that is hold them to integrity. Look, what's the truth? What's the truth each and every day? If you ask yourself that question and process it, you won't be putting yourself in these sabotage situations. It's when you get out of that connected to the self type thing. When you get disconnected, that's when the trouble happens. That's it. Thanks.
You'll notice from my hand that I made up a word, tangifying. It's not an actual word, but it is a reality that traders experience. And I'll define it as the act of transforming unrealized profits or losses into tangible things. So a trader looks at the number on the screen, and it's just a number on a screen, and they think to themselves, it's a car, it's my vacation, it's my mortgage, it's my rent, whatever it is. When I screen for talent, the first and foremost thing I say to them is, if you have to make money every month, if you have a mortgage, you have to make money every month, do not do this for a living. Don't do it for a living. Now, people don't like to hear that, because all of us have to make money at some point in time. But what my message to them is, it's hard enough to make money as a trader. If you focus on trying to make money, you're putting the odds so far against you, because you're not going to have the patience and discipline and do all the right things you need to be doing to let the money happen. That old saying of just do the right things and the money will come, that's what this is about. Now, our job is to help people understand that. And the best way I can help people understand that is to have them focus on the process of the trade, not the outcome of the trade. Quantifying good days and bad days is not by your net P&L. So the case study that I talked about with tangifying causing money focus is, successful trader had a history of catastrophizing and not holding profits. Self-esteem was directly correlated to the P&L. Had a good day, made a lot of money, went home, was happy. Lost money, went home and kicked the dog. Okay, that's dangerous for a lot of reasons, but who wants to live like that? That's the emotional roller coaster. Third part was, decision making was paralyzed because he was constantly watching the tape, focusing on the small picture rather than the bigger picture of the trade. I had a game plan, and as Brett had pointed out before, your frame of mind tends to shift once you have the game plan and then once the game starts. The game plan's still a good game plan, more times than not. You gotta have the confidence to say, hey, wait, I'm out of my rational frame of mind. What's my why for being in this trade? Why am I in this trade? Is it still there? Is my why still there? If your why is still there, it's the right trade to be involved in. So solutions that I was able to implement was encouraging the trader to get in the habit of looking at the money as points. Now, I know, sounds nice on paper, very, 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 very difficult to actually do. So, as an alternative, option two, cover up P&L. The single most effective strategy I had with a $400 million portfolio manager was exactly that. At any given time, he had $400 million at work in the market as portfolio, which means as the market moved, he would see his P&L move up $2-3 million, down $2-3 million. It would freak him out. Are the trades good? Yeah, they're good trades. Stop watching the tape, big guy. Put an index card over the number on the bottom of the screen and just trade the portfolio. You had good reasons for these positions. Let them work. You have stop losses in place to manage the risk. 3 years later, still using the strategy. Launched his own hedge fund last week. Okay, made a difference in his career just by covering up the P&L. That takes discipline. Again, that wanting versus willing thing. You want to get rid of this bad habit? Are you willing to do what it takes? Because he could just peek. Any baseball players? I'll give you an example. Anybody play baseball? John, you played baseball. You know baseball? I went 0-4. Did I have a good day or a bad day? Who here was thinking 0-4 you had a bad day? Come on. Raise your hands. Okay? You're quantifying my success based on the statistics. What if I told you this? I went 0-4. I hit a line drive back to the pitcher. Two bombs off the wall. The guy jumped the wall and caught. And a deep fly ball to left center field. That's choice one. Choice two, struck out four times looking. Let me ask you again, my friend in the back. I went 0-4. Did I have a good day or a bad day? The answer is, as John said, depends. Did you hit the ball well? Did you not hit the ball well? Trading is the same thing. When traders look at, I lost, you know, I only made 500 bucks and I should have made 3,000, I had a bad day. Or I lost $5,000, I had a bad, no! You could have made great trades and lost money on great trades. You cannot quantify your success by the P&L. You have to quantify your success by the quality of your at-bats, by the quality of your trades. It was actually a strategy that I implemented with the baseball team because the coach had a habit of putting the statistics on the wall. Never understood that one. He was trying to do the relative comparison thing, so traders would be thinking about the batting average as they're going up to the plate. Come on. Makes no sense. The guy's doing the math in his head. If I strike out, then I'm this. If I get a hit, then... You kidding me? I said, hey, how about instead of putting up what their statistics are, let's put up how many quality at-bats they had. They went 4-for-4 today because they had four quality at-bats. Traders, the same thing. I have them quantify their success, and I break it down. Quality trades. Number of high-quality trades. Number of total trades. What's that percent? I don't wonder how much you made a loss. I really don't care. Because if you do the right things over time, guess what's going to happen? The batting average will be there. You'll make the money. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
Thank you. The focus on money. There are many problems in psychology that have a circular component to them. A researcher out of Yale University, Daniel Wegner, talked about researched something he called the ironic motivational system. The irony behind the ironic motivational system is that when we talk to ourselves about not doing something, or we talk to ourselves about avoiding something, we actually end up making that outcome more likely to happen. The classic example is insomnia. The more the insomniac tells himself or herself, oh, I hope I can sleep, I can't afford to lose sleep, I gotta sleep, I need to relax, the more they think about sleep, the more it interferes with the process of sleeping. The irony is that in trying to not do something, we cue our motivational system to that very thing itself. So the irony for the trader who is trying to avoid losing money and who's focused on money is that as soon as they tell themselves, oh, I hope I don't lose money, I can't afford to lose money, or if they tell themselves, don't think about money, that, of course, is the very ironic thing that puts money into their head. So you can't really help a trader who's overly focused on money by dealing with them about money. We see this in the sex therapy literature. There are certain techniques that psychologists use that are extremely effective for performance problems regarding sexuality. But one of those techniques is not getting people to think more and worry more about their sexual performance. In fact, one classic brief therapy for sexual performance problems is that you instruct the couple, and usually it's the male who's having the performance problem, you instruct the couple, under no conditions when you do this exercise are you to have intercourse. What I want you to do is go out, buy some massage oil, and buy a book on massage, and give each other the most sensual massages you can, and but I don't want this to lead to intercourse. You're not allowed to for this exercise. So they get out the oil, and they have this very sensual massage, but they know they're not allowed to think about or do anything about intercourse. It takes intercourse off the table. What happens? They come in for their next session sheepishly saying, well, Doc, we didn't really follow the instructions. Sure enough, they made love and it worked fine. Because in focusing on the massage, they no longer made sexual performance part of the issue. And so it's like Doug was talking about with the traders. You want to take money off the table by getting them to focus on something else. So what you want them focused on are their good trading behaviors. Now, how do you know what someone's good trading behaviors are? You don't know unless you analyze each individual trader, because we all trade differently. And that's the essence of what's called a solution-focused approach. You get people to identify what are they doing when they are trading well. 90% of the time when a trader talks to me, they want to talk about their problems. That is not what to talk about. The more you talk about the problems, the more it plants in your head that you're a person beset by problems. What you want to focus on is what you do right. That's what you have to build on. What are my good trading behaviors so that you can do more of them? By focusing on your good trading behaviors, on your successful trades, your successful trading periods, it's just like that couple that's focusing on the sensual massage. It takes the attentional focus away from P&L, away from money, and toward what really matters, as Doug says, taking that good swing at the ball, making that good percentage trade. Well, we have done well by time, and we have the better part of 15 minutes available for comments, questions, any discussion you want to have about trading and trader performance. You can address them to the entire panel. You can address us individually. And if folks have trouble hearing the question, I will repeat it for the group. So let me open it up. Here's a... Okay, what defines a quality trade? Very good question, because how can you help traders make more quality trades if you don't know what a quality trade is to begin with? Who wants to tackle that one?
I'll take a first stab at it. The interesting thing about research, and I learned the hard way, got thrown down my throat when I did my graduate work and my doctorate, was the exploration process is about finding out what doesn't work, right? And trading's great, because it's literally a binary event. It's either up or down. So if up's not working, by definition, what has to be working? Down. So traders always say to me, okay, Doug, great, you want me to think about the high-quality trades. Well, how do I know what a high-quality trade is? Well, I'm not the trading guy. I'm the psychology guy. I'm the mental, the head coach guy. But I guarantee as a trader you can tell me what is not a high-quality trade. So here are some things that are not high-quality trades. Trading when you're emotionally erratic. If it's because you came into the office and you're pissed off about you got into a fight with someone. Trading, over-trading, trading in the moment, being emotional about trades. All those things we've talked about, those are when your probability of success are decreased dramatically. So it's not so much finding out what is the high-quality trade, it's more about eliminating what is not the high-quality trade, doing less of that, doing more of the other things, and the self-discovery stuff that Brett talks about is so key. I give personality assessments to my traders, not because I'm psychoanalyzing them. I'm not a therapist. I am not a licensed psychologist. That's not what I do. But I give them personality assessments so they can do self-exploration, so they can understand that they have personality tendencies to be introverted, or personality tendencies to be influenced by others, or personality tendencies to be low in confidence. And those are critical elements to success in trading. Know thyself. That's the key. That's what it's all about.
Tom, did you have any?
Just real quick, there's times in the day, you know, obviously around the economic numbers or whatever it is, the market you're trading, there's higher probabilities in those times of day, opens and closes. Middle times of the day is dominated by automated trading guys, a monster in the market. It's very difficult to play against that guy without a volatile market or a market that you can move in. So you know what trades aren't your good trades, but also a quality trade isn't one that you analyze forever, but one that feels right. We know when we got a bad trade on. We know immediately. Every single one of my guys, I don't care if they're 6 months or 6 years, they know when they have a bad trade on. It's a question of when they get out. It's a discipline issue.
I'll just jump in real quickly. I think it's important to have a conceptual framework for trading. The conceptual framework that I use myself personally in my trading and that I teach pertains to auction markets and the auction market process. And what you want are traders who are making trades for good reasons. What's a good reason for buying? A good reason for buying is because you see selling drying up. You see that fewer people are offering. There's less size being offered than there was before. What's a good reason for buying? You see more people bidding for something. And you have reasons for your trade based on what you read in the book or what you see on the screen pertaining to supply and demand, pertaining to who's bidding, who's offering, how much, when, and you develop an idea of selling's drying up, I'm going to buy. Or we have big new bidders coming in and I'm going to buy. And that makes for good trades. And if a trader can't identify what in the auction marketplace is leading them to their trade idea, then you start to think that they're making their trade for psychological reasons, not logical reasons. Yes, there's a question here.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, we talk about sticking with the game plan, and I was wondering, you know, if somebody has good discipline and follows all the right trade procedures, at what point do you decide that the game plan?
I have five this morning.
Let me just repeat the question. How do you know when a game plan is not correct?
Well, the game plan isn't correct for me when I start to see my trader starting to get crazy, pounding on the mouse, pounding on the table. All right, so now he's not following his game plan. He's angry because what he thought was going to happen isn't happening. And that's, you have to be able to adapt in this game. So a game plan isn't, I'm going to buy 17s and I'm going to sell 25s. It can be. I'm not saying that that's not a game plan. I'm not saying that there's something visually that's not on there. What I'm saying is I'm going to feel the market. If I come in with the opinion I'm going to be long, and all of a sudden we start breaking some support levels, and we get below the daily closes and, you know, opens of the previous day, it might not be a good idea for me to keep trying to buy every bottom going down, right? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I deal with on a daily basis. I came in with a game plan. This is where experience comes in, and listening to experienced traders and these types of things. It's an expanded vision. You know, I got my guys to think, this is my game plan, and this is what I said is going to work for today. Well, it's fine, but you know when it's not working, when it's not working. And that's where the evaluation comes in at the end of the day. What worked? What can I improve on? And we're all saying this, a lot of the same things in a lot of different variations. I try to just be as simple as I can with some of my guys because that's the only way they could take it. And I really try to get that point across to them in their game. It's not working. You know, I said this to one guy today, made $3 million 2 years ago, effortlessly. He can't make a dime today. And he comes in with a game plan every single day. I said, you know, and then he recaps to me what the market did at the end of the day. I go, I don't need you to tell me what the market did every day, all day. I saw it. Tell me what you could do to improve your game. Where are you lacking? You start asking yourself those questions, your game's going to improve.
I want to add a little to that because I happen to have just written a recent article for Trader Monthly about calling audibles. The issue isn't when the game plan's not working. It's the willingness to adjust your game plan. And if you have to, be full boat confident that it's going to be going up, and then, something's changed, breaks on immediately, stop, flip, and then full boat confidence in the other direction. That's critical. And what I have traders do is put feelers on. Small positions, one or two contract positions, that just tell them which way the water's moving. We're not smart enough to figure out where it's going to be tomorrow. Our job is to figure out the movement, the momentum, and play the momentum, right? And jump in there and jump out. Leave the fundamental analysis to the long-term investor. That's not necessarily the short-term game. The short-term game is more about where's the action, where's the money coming and going. So it's the willingness to adjust your game plan that's critical. Not so much, and when does it stop working? Like Tom said, when it's no longer making money, that's when it's not working anymore. But if being long's not working, then what must be working? Being short, by definition, because it's a binary event.
Let me just add real quickly, the third point that I made at the very bottom of my handout, using metrics for evaluating trader performance, and those of you who have been on my website know that I talk a fair amount about this. Collecting data on your trading performance will tell you if your game plan is working or not working. If you understand not only your P&L, but your specific profile of trading, how long do you hold on to positions on average? How long do you hold on to winners, losers? What's the average size of your winning trades, losing trades? What's the average size of your long trades, the average length of time you hold on to short trades? How often do you scratch trades? How do those patterns change in the morning versus the afternoon? These are all pieces of data that I collect on each individual trader, and each trader has their own profile of how they make money vis-a-vis these metrics. And when you see your metrics changing, you know that your game plan has changed. Now, either that's because the market has changed, it's because something in you has changed, but the metrics won't lie. If you're trading differently from how you normally trade when you make money, you know that something has changed, and that triggers some efforts to either adjust to a changing market or to adjust yourself so that you get back into your successful strategies. We got a little more time. Yes? Okay, so the question is, in trader development, the relative strengths and weaknesses of automated trading, trading by computers, versus the human traders, for all human traders, strengths and foibles.
I'll take it.
Okay.
We do a lot of research and studies on automated trading right now, because obviously it's changed the face of the game. And I know very few that are consistently making money at it, because they feel like they're taking out the emotional side to it. I get limited emotion if I plug in some numbers. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't, because you still have to manage loss, you still have to manage your money. And you ever see when these automated trading systems go live, they go fast. And the ability to lose amounts of money and make, but I've never seen me just pulling on and just print money. I've seen them put them on and lose money real quick. There are strengths and weaknesses to the automated trading system, I think there's going to be a blend. I think it could help you get a leg off or an edge off that you may not have gotten manually. But I've looked at a lot, and I've looked at a lot of black boxes. I know a lot of guys that have used black boxes outside of my place, and I've only heard of a couple of success stories. And that came down to the guy who was actually programming the trade. It wasn't that he was able to scale out the 30 guys in the office. It was based on the one individual who was programming the trade. There's a lot of stuff that goes into automated trading. I know everybody in the industry, not everybody, but there's this big push that automated trading is going to replace human beings. And I'm telling you from the seat that I sit in, I see hundreds of traders globally right now. It is not. And the key is that it's a human, it still has to be programmed by a human. You know, that's the one thing. I'm telling you, the amount of hours we spend in R&D on this automated trading stuff, And we get solicited by, because we're such a huge clearinghouse, we get every vendor out there. And they bring their programmers in, and we do this whole thing. You know, I'd rather point and click right now. We call guys like me click foo guys. You guys like to click foo, but that's what I like to do. You know, I don't know if that answered your question. I wasn't really sure what it was.
John, did you have a comment about that?
Yeah, I deal with a lot of black box systems and actually integrating the execution of a lot of systems. And what you end up finding is it's just a different game. And what you have is it's still individuals trading against individuals. It's just an individual and employer that you program today.
Mm-hmm.
And that toy still has to be managed in the way. You're talking about you can plug them in and they can just churn something apart. That it didn't understand before. And what you have is people bringing different tools. In many cases, the edge that these systems are describing is much smaller than the edge that you'd find in a more psychological based ramp, be it a pet or someone trading online electronically. So what you end up doing is you end up leveraging a lot more money for a much smaller edge. So when you've got all, if you think that you're the only participant in this marketplace, sorely mistaken, because there's a lot of people programming black boxes to go after that same edge. So now you're in a new arena and a very competitive arena for that same thing, and you as the manager of that black box has to come into the same exact decision engine to make the process. It may not be about a one lot, it may not be about a 10 lot, it may be about the last 1500 trades. And when it comes back down to basically the same emotion as far as I'm concerned.
I think, and we talked a lot about this because when I was at a hedge fund, we actually had a pretty sizable black box team that they had recruited out of one of the top, like they were printing money. They came to us, team of five people, I mean, the smartest guys you could find kind of thing, and they couldn't make it work. They were very smart guys, but they couldn't, what they did worked before, didn't work then. But what was interesting about that process, and black box trading, it's happening, it's going to happen, that's the future, no doubt about that. What I think is interesting for the other traders, the non-black box traders, is the markets, I believe, will actually create a different kind of inefficiency, because you'll have machine against machine, and then it'll be like, it might become more of a, you might be able to identify different kinds of trends in the market, because they're going to be automated trends, because the black box volume will take over the human volume. Just by virtue of a button, they'll execute mass orders instead of a person just trying to click everywhere they can. But to me, that's exciting, because that means that the occupation is not going to die. Right, because there's going to be a lot of smart people competing against smart people. The edge is this for that, and they're fighting for that, but it still creates liquidity and opportunity for everyone else out there. It just means it's going to be a faster-paced game.
One quick comment, I know we're moving on time. I think research shows that the more finite the search space, the more successful artificial intelligence systems and expert systems are. So, for instance, you can program computers now to play chess and have been able to for a while, and they will outplay the vast majority of human beings. It's because chess has a finite number of moves. It's huge, but it's a finite number of moves, right. And computers, through brute force, can create solutions. The greater the search space, the less able expert systems are to outperform humans. So, for instance, we don't have any computer systems, black boxes, that replace fighter pilots. It's because the range of actions that fighter pilots have to take and the combinations of those are so huge that we can't model that. So trading falls somewhere in between chess and fighter pilot work in that respect. It's not an infinite space, but it certainly is not a very finite one. And so far, I think as my colleagues are pointing out, the evidence has yet to be seen that the black boxes over time can perform as expert chess systems do, for instance.
Theoretically, if there's a black box that unlocks the key, if that does happen, then the market doesn't exist anymore, right? Because the market's based on supply and demand. So one guy's gonna have all the money, and the rest of us can be look for other jobs, you know, at the end of the day. But why don't computers fly airplanes all the time? Because there are too many variables to account for that can't be predicted in models, in regression models. But it's exciting stuff, because that's currently the push that you see all across the floor here. And it's exciting stuff because it's quantifiable and smart people get involved, but it's you know, there's a reason why it's the trend, but I don't think it's the answer.
But it changes the marketplace.
Absolutely.
So, and that really gets to John's point. You have more and more people searching for smaller and smaller edge, and so when you trade on a frequent basis close to the market, it changes how the market moves, and you can tell the difference. If you're an active trader, you know the difference between a highly computerized market and one that's not. It moves differently.
So even though those black boxes may not have the golden key, as Doug says, they can affect how markets trade and affect our performance.
Right.
Now, I want to be respectful of time. I don't know what's coming in this room afterward. I really, really appreciate the participation of my colleagues. And I appreciate your attendance. Please be in touch with any and all of us if you have questions for us, if we can be of any help to you. We'll be hanging around for a few minutes if you want to come on up and have any kind of discussion. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the FIA show.